Good morning. This is Darrell Gunter, your host for Leadership with Darrell W. Gunter. And I'm so happy to have another Live Places Publishing author with us. As you know, we've chronicled a number of different authors on our program. We have Mr. Steve Majors, who's the author of not one, but two books. The first book was a memoir called High Yella, and his newest book is A Multiracial Experience. Steve, welcome to the program.
Darrell, thanks so much. I'm so pleased to be here.
You know, your topic of your book is spot on, right on time, because it's going to educate a lot of folks about being multiracial, but also being gay, correct?
Yeah, that's correct. Yeah.
Okay. So before we jump in, share with our audience a little bit about your background, education, et cetera.
Sure. So I grew up in a small rural community in Western New York called Batavia, about halfway between Buffalo and Rochester. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's sort of where that's both my origin story and it's the setting for those books. And the story of Liz, you know, the story of my my upbringing in Western New York is really, it's kind of a complex story. I grew up the youngest of five kids.
Okay.
To a single mother. Oh. And as the youngest of five kids, I stuck out from the rest because my four older siblings are Black and I'm the only one who's mixed race.
Okay.
What complicated that was I was mixed race. And to many people, they tell me to the outside world, I appear as white, which gave rise to sort of the memoir High Yella, mm-hmm. because it's the story of my experience growing up in an all Black family as a mixed race kid. And as a kid who at the time did not realize he was gay, and how I sort of navigated that, how I found I struggled to find my place in my family, and how my family, I would say, struggled to find its place in that community, which was an all-white community.
Wow.
But fast forward, but you know, in the years since then, I am married. My husband and I have two daughters, both of whom are Black. Uh-huh. And so the book High Yella sort of interweaves those stories because my kids, as two Black young women growing up with two men who look to the outside world both white, mm-hmm. they had a bit of a journey themselves. Mm-hmm. And so the book High Yella sort of recounts that. And the multiracial experience is adapted from High Yella. It mostly focuses on my upbringing as a mixed race kid in an all Black family, but I think both titles, you know, really are really relevant in the world that we live in today.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And did you attend college?
I did. And, you know, as the youngest of five, you know, the one thing I would say, my grandmother was a third grade dropout, a domestic, a woman who cleaned toilets and floors and took in yep. people's mending. And I think it's remarkable to think all these years later that, you know, she has, you know, she's long since passed, a grandson who was able to go to college because she instilled in us the value of an education. Right. So I went to school in upstate New York, small, tiny town called Potsdam,
mm-hmm.
and studied engineering. Okay. Not a great engineer. went on to Ohio State to get my master's degree in journalism.
Okay. Spent
the first third of my career working in television news.
Oh, nice.
Across the country. Mm-hmm. And in, I'd say, the second third of the career, hopefully there's a third more to go. But in the second third of my career, I work in nonprofit marketing and communications.
Nice, nice. Now, is that working in nonprofit, is that one particular nonprofit? Or do you apply your services to many different nonprofits?
Yes, currently. It's been in the last 12 years, it's been three different ones. But I'm currently the chief of external affairs for Teach for America.
Okay. Wow. Very nice. Very nice. Very nice. So let's talk about your memoir first. High Yella. When was it published? Who published it? And what was your motivation for publishing it?
Sure. So it's was out in October of 21. Mm-hmm. But I'm finding there are a lot of folks who are just, it was still sort of in the midst of the pandemic. So there are a lot of folks that are just discovering the title. Mm-hmm. It was published by the University of Georgia Press.
Mm-hmm.
Big believer in academic presses. They've yep. got some tremendous literary imprints. And available in all usual places, all the bookstores and on Amazon, etc. My motivation, I'll tell you, Daryl, I think was I was at that point in my life. I've been carrying these stories around for 50 years, 50 plus years. And the stories of my upbringing, it was, you know, it was tough at times. My family used to always joke around that somebody's got to write this down. No one will ever believe what our lives have been like. And I grew up in a family of storytellers, and they would say to me, you know, one day you're going to write this story, aren't you? And I got to a point in my life where I felt like I had enough of life experience to be able to interpret all of those stories in a way that I thought would be appealing to folks.
Nice. Nice. And so when you think about it, what tell us some of your early experiences, and how did you, you know, let's talk about the good ones, the tough ones. And of course, how did you deal with that as being a young biracial young man?
Yeah, there's a small story, not a spoiler alert. I won't give it all away, but there's a small story that happens in the very close to the very beginning of the book, in which I recount, like, one of my earliest memories is standing with my older sister outside of a movie theater. And for no reason that I can recall, I asked her, was I adopted? And because in my 6-year-old brain, that was the only way that I could, you know, I saw what was on TV, and it was like, I was a kid who looked different than my family. And so I was like, well, I must be adopted, this thing called adopted, because I don't look like the rest of this family. And Daryl, I remember distinctly, she got down in my face, grabbed me by my shoulders, and she asked me, she said, is Ma black? Am I black? Meaning her. Are all of our siblings black? And then she pointed at me and she said, baby brother, then you are black. And don't you ever forget it.
Oh.
And that, in the moment, it grounded me, because I realized, like, I belong to these people. I am part of them.
Right.
But at the same time, I had to reconcile that with a world outside of my home that looked at me when I would go to school or walk into a store and give me looks, especially if I was close to my siblings or next to my mother. And the message to them was, you don't belong with them. Like, you can't belong to them. So I'd say sort of my early years was a lot of trying to figure out, how do I make sense of that? And I think a complicating factor, Daryl, is the man who was my sibling's father, Pops, was black. My family maintained up until the time I was a young adult that this man was my father. And I knew, I could look in the mirror. I could, now genetically, I knew that was possible, but that, you know, their desire to hold on to that story, because ultimately, Hayela also tells the story, the search of who was my father, who I would later learn was a white man, who I still to this day do not know. Mm-hmm. I have a good sense of it. A couple of years ago, I did a DNA test and got very close to this random family. And I'm like, now I see what's going on here. But my mother, who has since passed, took that story to her grave of who my father was. And to this day, I do not know.
You know, it's interesting, a story. I don't want to interrupt your interview with my story. Recently, as of last year, through 23andMe, a young lady contacted me, and she says, I think that my grandfather was either your father's son or his brother's son, because DNA doesn't lie, you know. So we, you know, she's connected, but we just got to figure out, you know, because this was before my father married my mother, and both my father and brother were traveling salespeople.
Daryl, there's something weird going on here, because that was the story my mother said, the traveling salesman, right? But it was a case. It's a case where the DNA did not lie, and I actually contacted the family, And I knew until you do something called a paternal test or something like that, you could identify that it's probably a couple of people within that family.
Yeah.
But they got to a point where they didn't want to engage anymore. And I got to a point, Daryl, and I think this is the essence of the book, both Hyella and The Multiracial Experience. You know, I'm 57 years old,
mm-hmm.
and I've had to make peace. I am the man who I am. Like, yeah. I will not know my father. I will not know the ending of that story. And I'm at peace with that.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. You know, our daughter Bailey, who's 26, she's adopted.
Mm.
And she's the reason why we got on 23andMe, because, you know, while we had an open adoption, you know, with the birth mother, and the birth mother didn't identify the birth father. When Bailey got of age, you know, she contacted the adoption agency and did 23andMe, and she found him, you know.
Wow. Yeah.
You know, so
similar stories on my end with our two adopted girls. Like, they did the same thing. And so that's what's fascinating, to watch that sort of the synchronicity.
Yes.
Me searching for my, you know, biological family, them searching for their biological family, and us ultimately coming to the same realization, you know, the family that we grew up with, that's family.
Yeah.
That's family.
So when someone finishes your book, what is it your hope that they're going to come away with from Hyella?
Yeah.
And I think for our audience, Hyella refers to folks like Steve and I, light skin.
Yeah. It's a term that has a lot of currency in the Black community. I would caution anyone who's white from using it, though.
That's right.
it's a term, it's a descriptive term, because, you know, not all Black folks look alike. And so we use that to differentiate skin tone.
Yes.
Sometimes it can be used, it can smack a little bit of colorism.
Yeah.
Because some people might use it to say that you are setting yourself apart because you have a lighter skin tone.
Right.
So the title Hyella is, you know, it was a term that my grandmother used lovingly with me.
Uh-huh.
And so it's a term I used to describe myself, and I have no problems with it. Mm-hmm. But taking it away, you know, my story is, all of us have our very unique stories, but I think that there's some themes here that are universal, you know, which is, you know, this idea of finding your own identity in the world, no matter whether it's race or sexual orientation or gender identity or what have you, you determine your own identity. You don't allow anyone from the outside, no matter what you look like or how you present, to determine that. I think the other, you know, theme or lesson that I want people to take away is, you know, the search for family. It's a complicated thing. It never ends. Your family as well are the folks that you choose ultimately. Even the ones that you're born into, you have to actively choose them as a family at some point in your life. And, you know, I also wrote it at a time, I think, where there was a lot of conversations and continue to be in this country about race and
yes.
class and yes. culture and identity.
Right.
And the complexities of all those. And this is just another story that adds to the canon of American literature that talks about how diverse and wonderful we all are in all our differences.
Right. Beautiful. Ladies and gentlemen, we are here with Mr. Steve Major, who's the author of two books, Hyella, which we just finished talking about. And now we're going to talk about The Multiracial Experience. And so, as you said earlier, that The Multiracial Experience was an outcome of the Hyella book. What was the storylines that you wanted to cover in this new book that you didn't cover in Hyella?
Yeah, so it's adapted from Hyella. And as I mentioned, Hyella interweaves two stories, the story of my upbringing and the story of my becoming a parent and learning how to parent two daughters. And so what I did is I thought that my story, just as a multiracial man, separate and apart from my identity as a father, as a gay man, mm-hmm. I thought that first part was just very unique and distinct. So that is the spine. That's the substance of the multiracial experience. And if you picked up a Live Places Publishing book, you know that it comes with suggested reading and a framework for discussing that. It is expected to be part of a, you know, I use the word canon again, canon of other academic titles, in which I hope that, you know, are taught in at the higher ed level, when people are having conversations or when they're trying to teach about things like race, identity, class, and culture. That was not a book that I had in college. I'm sure, I don't believe it may have not have been a book that you had. And even in African American studies, you'll find that there's a missing element of the African American experience in some of the titles that are even curated in African American studies. Mm-hmm. And I think the multiracial experience is one that belongs there.
Absolutely. Yeah. You know, it's interesting. I am an adjunct professor at Seton Hall, and we had a black African studies curriculum when I was there. And because of politics, it got shut down. Now it's back. And I'm definitely going to introduce you to Dr. Forrest Pritchett, who's still there. He was my instructor way back when. And because these are things that we need to discuss and need to understand. What are some of the key, again, the key themes and messages that you hope that the reader comes away with?
Yeah, I think that, especially when I think about that title, you know, I want them to have, even if it's not like that they, certainly they're going to learn about my experience, but I think I hope it sparks conversations, the Live Places Publishing title, about the role of colorism in the Black community, right? It exists. It existed within my family. And so we need to have a conversation about that.
For our audience who haven't heard that word before, can you define colorism for them?
Yep. So much like any ism, right? Sexism, ageism, ableism, you know, this is a way of discriminating or differentiating people based on the color of their skin, not so much between Black or white. It's a term that's often used in the Black community of how us Black folks, right, often, or sometimes, I should say, not often, but sometimes, discriminate and differentiate amongst ourselves based on the skin tone that we have, even though the variations may be minuscule, right? So you have high yellow and red bone and dark mahogany, and sometimes in ways we treat each other in ways that set ourselves apart in ways that we shouldn't.
We shouldn't, exactly. Back in the day with some of the fraternities and sororities, they had the brown paper bag tests. If you were darker than the brown paper bag, I'm sorry, you can't apply, you know?
Yeah, it's interesting. And so, you know, I'm hoping that it sparks conversations around that. I hope it sparks conversation around, I also grew up, you know, strangely, there's this strange sub story in both the titles, Live Places and Hyella, about the fact that my grandmother, a Black woman, who I would say was probably racist against white people. Like you'll hear how my family talked about white people. How did she reconcile that with the fact that she had a grandson who looked white and Daryl, her companion of 40 years, was a white man?
Wow.
No lie. This is a woman who like defied the Klan, the social mores, like her own family, to have a common law husband of 40 years who was white, second husband. And yet, so I grew up with people, rural white people. And I'm formed by that too. I know what the rural white experience is like. I grew up among it. So I think that's another conversation. What are the commonalities between the Black rural experience and the white rural experience? A lot of similarities. And one other thing is, a lot of the titles, when you read about the Black experience, you often, they're often in urban settings. You don't hear a lot it's rare to hear about Black rural, that for those to be the settings for books and memoirs about Black folks. And so it's opening folks' eyes to a corner of the world that they might not have been aware of.
Seems to me that this is a topic that has so many rich parts to it to help us to better understand and to educate. Are you planning to go on tour and lecture about this?
Yeah. Well, I've been fortunate enough to have been invited, and I hope that I'll continue to get invitations. So I've, you know, I lectured at my alma mater. I've done, you know, book readings and signings and podcasts. I've done television interviews and newspaper interviews. I never get tired of it because it's, you know, although the story is, you know, 50 some years old, again, I think the themes are evergreen. They're fresh.
Yes.
And
yes.
I think these are conversations. You know, a quick tidbit is that, you know, in the latest census, the multiracial population is the fastest growing population in our country.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we're one part of it, right? As two men who, you know, are Black and white. But the multiracial experience is one that we've got to acknowledge. Yes. It is distinct. You know, I can be Black and I can be multiracial.
Yes, yes, yes.
And so I think we need to create the space to have conversations about the multiracial experience in ways that we probably have not.
I think it's fabulous because my daughter, Bailey, who is appears to be Black, right? But when you look at her DNA and her family line, she's what, 53% Indian?
Mm.
Cherokee Indian. She's got some Jewish in her. She got this in her. She's the United Nations, you know. But she just recently got married to Wynn, her now husband, and he's white. And I was telling them about, I got this conversation coming up with a gentleman named Steve Majors, who's talking about his multiracial experience, because what I think is so important for both sides to open up their eyes and their ears and to learn.
Yeah,
because raising a Black child, because mm-hmm. in our society, you look Black, you're Black.
Yeah,
you know, yeah. And being able to really navigate through society on both sides is just so important. I remember my brothers and sisters. I'm the youngest of seven, and how they prepped me for the name calling.
Mm.
So when someone called me, Oreo, half breed. I would go, yeah. I said, that's all you got. That's all you got. That's what yeah. I am. You know, I am what I am, right? But because of the lessons that they learned, they were able to educate me as their younger brother to deal with that. And I think for us to have the ability to educate our public about that, people will think twice about saying hurtful, what they think are hurtful things. For some people, it will hurt. Because everyone's not the same in regards to being able to understand it and deflect and defend themselves.
Yeah, I mean, I can tell you, you know, people just to be more thoughtful and mindful of what you say about people, how you categorize them. I can't tell you the number of spaces that I have been in. This doesn't happen as often, where people do not know that my mother was Black. And the things that they will say when they assume that everyone in the room looks just like them.
Yeah.
Shocking. Shocking.
Yeah. You know, and then there's the other thing that has happened when you're around some white folks so much, they forget you're Black.
Oh, yeah. That, yes.
And then you say some things. I remember this one guy, he actually, I was managing a sales organization, and I was a senior vice president, and we're talking about some issues that are on his team. And he actually said the N word.
Mm.
And I looked at him, I said, you know, I'm Black, right? And he just like, oh my God, I'm so sorry. It was very apologetic, but it was very disappointing that he would go there, even if it wasn't me. But I think he had a learning moment from that particular incident.
Yeah, I, you know, similarly, I, you know, I tell people, like, I start a new job, or I mean, I have to self-identify
mm-hmm.
to let folks know who I am. And I have to figure out a way to do it in a way that's not awkward and odd.
Right.
Just
right.
to say, like, you know, here's who I am. Here's the experience. Here's that I'm bringing to the table. Here's the identity that you should be aware of.
Do you find in doing that and self-identifying, do you feel that you need to also identify that you are gay?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, and it's easy. And, you know, you find that is less difficult, believe it or not. but, you know, in the same way that people casually mention their wife, their spouse, their girlfriend, their boyfriend, people do it every day and don't even think twice about it. Right. And it's taken some time for me, but, you know, I call, you know, my husband in a way, sure. You know, in a way that just rolls off my tongue now in ways that I'd say even 10 or 15 years ago, I found sort of stilted and difficult and awkward.
Right, right. You know, it was interesting. One of my colleagues at Elsevier, she was running Science Direct, and we're at a company holiday party, whatnot, and we're talking, and she goes, you know, I'm gay. I'm like, yeah, and? She says, you're so relaxed about it. I said, half my staff is gay.
Yeah.
You know, and I had 130 people. So, you know, and I guess growing up in Atlantic City, New Jersey, where we did have a pretty good size gay community. And my mother, the way that she treated all of her customers, everybody's a human being. And I learned that human common touch from my mother, you know, for that. And just see people for who they are. And our world, I believe, could be a far better place if we all just allow people to, as they say, live and let live.
I agree. And, you know, back to the first title, Hyella, you know, there are several chapters devoted to that, like wrestling with my identity and getting to a point where even my own family, you know, who, you know, certainly accepted me, you know, even though I didn't look like them, even though they knew I had a different father, but struggled with another aspect of my identity in terms of, you know, my orientation. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, it's just fascinating. You know, human beings are fascinating. I like to say that, you know. Absolutely.
So when will you think you'll have this speaking tour coming up?
Well, I tell folks, you know, if they choose to, you know, they can keep checking on my website. It's steve-majors.com. I keep a running list of their past interviews. I'll be happy to, you know, include this interview on them, some of my own writings, articles that I've been in, a little bit more about the book. And I keep a running list of any upcoming events that might be happening.
Sounds like an interesting sitcom that you might have.
Yeah, it is. I mean, yeah, somewhere in there is, especially I think one of the things that I'll speak it out into the universe. You know, fascinated about the relationship between my grandmother and her companion, John, and the 4 years that they spent together and how the world changed around them. And I'm thinking about working on a stage play.
Nice. You know, interesting. What was that movie, Monsters Ball, with Halle Berry?
Yeah.
That made me think of when you mentioned your grandmother.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Well, you know, and that's the thing about love. Love cuts through everything.
Yeah. And, you know, I write in the book that they outlasted everyone, you know, just by the sheer power of their will, their commitment to one another, you know, 40 years, you know, getting together in the, you know, in the early 1950s in rural Western New York, and their constancy, right, their commitment.
Yes.
Helped even the community come to accept them because they were unwavering.
Right.
And unapologetic.
Right.
And so that's how they managed. And that sort of resilience, I took a lot from that. And that's how I came through as well, right?
Absolutely.
Being true to myself.
Beautiful, beautiful. Well, believe it or not, Steve, as I told you, this time flies. We're at the end of our program. I want to give you the last word. If you could take 30 seconds to share whatever you want to share with the audience about your book, A Multiracial Experience.
You know, I would just say, you know, particularly, you know, in the polarized environment that we live in, the divisive, you know, rhetoric that we hear, I hope folks take an opportunity to pick up either of the titles and read it. Because, again, although it is my story, I hope that there's some lessons in there that ultimately we all are more alike than we are different.
Absolutely. Well said. Steve, I want to thank you for coming on our program. Ladies and gentlemen, I'm here with Steve Majors, the author of A Multiracial Experience and his first book, Hyella. And I want to thank him for coming on the program. Thank you, Steve.
Thank you for having me.
that wraps it up this week on Leadership with Darrell W. Gunter. And I want you to have a great day. But remember, leadership begins with you.